This is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic.
Is it the time to panic, Chris?
Panic button, I hit it last night.
That's when you officially hit the panic button?
I did.
Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Welcome to the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Matt Lee with you here for episode 40. You can follow me on Twitter at MattLee980. A reminder that you can keep updated on the C4 podcast by liking us on Facebook at C4 Canucks Hockey Blog. Or actually, sorry, screw that up already. C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. And while you're at it, give Canucks Hockey Blog a like and follow. Happy to join via phone right now by Chris Golden from his humble abode in beautiful Stevenson. Chris, thanks for being here digitally.
Oh, no problem. I'm a little disappointed that I'm not there in studio to start us off strong. You know, I'm not even a minute in and you're already stumbling.
Yeah, I could have used you here, but through things beyond my control, I could not get here in time for you to join me physically, so doing this via phone for the bajillionth time, I guess, this season. But nonetheless, we can't let the thousands and thousands of listeners down by not having a podcast. Am I right?
So true. And let's be honest, you're not the only. We're not the only group in Vancouver that gets down by too early.
Yeah, as we'll talk about very quickly. But of course, Clayton Nemo not here for this one. He'll be back hopefully for the weekend edition of the show. You can check out his tweets. And send him a haiku, by the way, at Canuck Clay on Twitter. Make sure you tag it with hashtag CHBHaiku. Coming up on today's show, we're going to discuss Tuesday's less-than-ideal start of a road trip against the Nashville Predators. Vancouver hanging around for about 40 minutes against the Preds before pumping Eddie Lack for 3 in the last 7 minutes of the game. Chris, you boldly suggested that they would go 0-for-5 on this trip.
Well, let's see. You got best team in the NHL. They never do well in Philadelphia. Back-to-back to Carolina, and the Canucks always seem to find a way to lose to that type of team. Where they get their wins, I don't know.
So even Carolina, who's been at the bottom of the standings for about 95% of the season, are still going to beat the Vancouver Canucks?
It's the darkest timeline.
That is quite a dark timeline from you. Even from you, who's like sort of always been in between in between Clay and myself.
Yeah, I think right about now people are probably telling me I'm jumping off the bandwagon, and then all those, you know, hardcore fans are, you know, pulling in my fan membership, and maybe they're right to do so, but it's tough times. Tough times these are.
By the way, since we're talking about Carolina, they are the third worst team in the NHL standings.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention it, because a coworker of mine was asking me if I thought it was logistically possible for the Vancouver Canucks to lose enough games to have a good chance at the Connor McDavid sweepstakes, and at the time I said, no, I don't think they'll lose enough. Yeah.
Do you think it's possible?
No,
I'm getting my hopes up now.
There's the Oilers. Who can lose more than the Oilers can?
No one tries to lose more than the Edmonton Oilers.
So the best they'll get is, I don't know,
another top 10 pick?
Yeah. I don't even know what
it is. Oh, well, either way, it's all a long ways from now. Also coming up on the show, we're going to talk about the Canucks' continued goal-scoring struggles. That's been a bugaboo for the team all season. Alex Edler's blast through a paddleless Pekka Rinne, making it just one goal in the last 6 periods. Holy. Chris and I are going to talk about line combinations and Willie D possibly shuffling the deck. One goal, 6 periods, Chris. If that's not entertaining hockey, I don't know what is. And it wouldn't be a podcast in January without the discussion of trades, of course. Minnesota yesterday sending a 3rd-round pick to Arizona in exchange for goaltender Devan Dubnyk. So what does that mean for the value of Eddie Lack? We're going to get into more Eddie Lack trade speculation coming up right after we hit the rewind button. Oh, by the way, Chris, before I press the rewind button, I should have pressed this.
This is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic.
Could you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Let me play it again.
This is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic.
Is it the time to panic, Chris?
Oh, gosh. Panic button, I hit it last night.
That's when you officially hit the panic button?
I did.
Really?
Yeah.
So, usually you press the panic button when it's sort of like rock bottom. Yesterday for you was rock bottom?
Oh, God, yeah. Down too early. You know what? I might have taken my hand off and regretted the decision after Edler's goal. But, yeah, after the next three goals, it's like...
But you know what?
Panic.
Like, I'm right there with you, first of all, but... You could make the argument like the Canucks were sort of in that game. They were only down 2-1 going into the third period.
And, you know, this is why I regretted hitting the panic button after those first two goals, was that when Edler scores that goal on the delayed penalty, the Canucks are just exerting so much pressure against the Preds, Nashville skating around, chasing the puck. Vancouver was having their way with them. And then that just disappears. It's like, oh, yeah, we did our thing. We're good. Yeah, this is perfect. It's just like 2011. We're going all the way. What do you mean it's 5-1? Like, that's just how it seemed to happen.
Well, I mean, if you're borrowing a line from the Vancouver dressing room these days, there you know, might be some sort of hashtag moral victory that they did hang around in the game as long as they did.
Oh, God.
It was a road game. And like, I think one of the things we're sort of forgetting here in this discussion is that Nashville is one of the best teams in the NHL right now.
So can you say that again?
Nashville is one of the best teams in the NHL. Actually, they are the best team in the NHL right now.
They've lost two games at home all season.
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts.
Yeah. Like, you know what the crazy thing is, since we're talking about Nashville, it's not like they made gigantic changes. You know, out went Patrick Hornqvist, in comes James Neal.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Jones has matured a year. Shea Weber's still a solid from the back end. Pekka Rinne has made a full recovery from a pretty serious hip operation over the last summer.
New coach.
Mike probably Ribeiro. The biggest difference, but... I mean, by the way, would you say Peter Laviolette a Jack Adams candidate this far into the season?
Well, who else out there would be close?
Well, not Willie Desjardins at this point.
Well... Maybe it is. Maybe the Canucks are actually worse.
Could you make a case for Jack Capuano on the island?
I think he's got too much...
talent?
No, it's...
Barry Trotz in Washington?
No, Washington's just sort of meh. Jack Capuano in New York, I mean, the Islanders, he's had enough time with them. Like, there's nothing that this season really shows as any different than previous years. They're just seemingly making things work a little bit better. It's Laviolette hands down. Like, there's no one else.
Yeah, right. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just throwing out other candidates. But, you know, I mean, again, Nashville, first in the Western Conference, and they looked every bit the part yesterday. The vaunted offense coming alive, especially in those last 7 minutes. By the way, Chris, this is the second time this season the Canucks have lost three straight games in regulation. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well,
you know, but all that said, they still woke up this morning in a playoff position.
Which we asked this question on SCHP, we will get to it a little bit later, about giving a grade, and I guess you have to argue that the Canucks are passing right now, because if the playoffs started today, they're in.
I mean, they'd be playing Nashville, mind you, but they'd be in nonetheless.
Hey, there was, you know, that, was it 09 or 08, well, maybe even farther back, when, hey, we went 2-0 up on Detroit.
Yeah.
And then got Kluchet.
Was that was like 2002, wasn't it?
I don't know. When you're my age, Matt, it's all a blur.
All right. Well, the quality of shots may not have been on Pekka Rinne last night, but the quantity sure was. 31 in total. Only one gets by him, and that comes, of course, on that frenzied play with a delayed call. He didn't have his stick. So the quantity was there, but do you think the quality of shots was?
Not at all. I mean, there were... maybe a couple opportunities after that goal where Rinne had to really step up his game. But to me, I mean, Rinne's a great goaltender. I just don't feel the Canucks truly challenged him. And it's often what you hear, whether it be players or coaches, talk about when you don't have that puck luck and things aren't going your way, you tend to not see or get any of those breaks. Well, there wasn't any break. It's not the Canucks would deserve one. They just sort of threw the puck from anywhere, any which way, and hope for the best. You know, it's the proverbial go up to bat, close your eyes, and swing.
Here's the thing. I agree with 99% of what you said, except for the part about the break. They had a break, in my mind. They had only two power plays the entire game. But here's where the break comes in. Pekka Rinne exits the game early as a precaution, mind you, while the club is still nursing a 2-1 lead on the Canucks. So in comes ice-cold Carter Hutton, who's played decently this season, pressed into duty unexpectedly. So it was there for the taking, and then moments after Hutton comes into the game, the Canucks have a power play. Now, they haven't exactly been lighting it up on the power play recently, but that was probably the Canucks' best chance to tie that game. In a game, again, that they had no business being in.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even get a sniff. They didn't even set up on that power play.
Well, but that's the thing. That's what I think is most worrisome.
Well, like I'm saying that that was their break. That was their chance.
Sure.
And if you're Willie Desjardins, you're like just exasperated, looking up into the rafters, like, what do I got to do to get something out of this team when it comes to offense at the most crucial of times?
Well, I don't have the answer to that. If I did, I'd be coaching. I'd be behind the bench. I'd be making millions of dollars.
You'd have a mustache, too?
I would. Oh, God. Yeah, the best NHL coaches have all had mustaches.
Like Harold.
I mean, I'm looking at Hutton's stats here. He had, just over 17 minutes on the ice. Obviously only got to 10 shots, stopped them both. We actually see Vancouver getting two shorthanded shots on him. Zero on the power play, to your point. Like
what is that?
You're down by a goal. You're, as you said, an ice-cold goaltender on the ice, and you can't muster shots.
So, in other words, they generated more chances to score shorthanded than they did on that power play.
Yeah, two shots shorthanded.
So, if you're you, and you are you, you just sort of, I guess, leaned back exasperated and you pressed the panic button out of just rage, almost?
I think so. It's like one of those easy buttons from, was it, Staples?
Yeah, that was easy.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, that wasn't easy. That's the panic part. Like, I just don't get it. I mean, I also look at the lineup. I mean, Bo Horvat gets scratched. Yannick Weber gets scratched.
Not that those two probably would have made the difference?
No, but it's those are the players you decide to sit upstairs. It has me scratching my head.
Well, I think Bo Horvat sat out due to illness, did he not?
Oh, that I wasn't aware of. Like, I know Miller was backing up because he had the flu.
There seems to be some sort of bug circulating the room, and from what I had read, Horvat had sat out due to illness. I don't know about Weber.
Okay, yeah, no, and I hadn't heard that. And if that's the case, okay, makes a little more sense. It's obviously easier to understand if you have a player that's not 100%.
But again, like we said, probably wouldn't have made the difference regardless.
Oh, no, and not when you're only throwing 10 pucks towards an ice-cold goaltender. If this was football and you had the second string or even a third string quarterback coming in cold in the fourth quarter, that defense is blitzing.
Yeah. Like, if you're the Canucks, you should have came in here, like, smelling blood in the water.
Yeah.
And there was no, like, sort of desperation in my mind. There was no killing instinct. None of that.
Outside of that one portion of time in the second period.
Yeah. It's pretty sad.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised that Eddie Lackett in the start? I mean, I know we mentioned Ryan Miller sort of battling a flu bug of some sort, but we always mention on the podcast about goaltending. Can you pin this loss at all on goaltending, or did Lack keep the Canucks in this one?
It didn't help. They're down too early, but between sort of the second goal and the third goal, Eddie was making some great saves to keep Vancouver in it, and down only by one. But once that third goal went in, bang, 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 was it with 3 goals, 4 minutes.
And it wasn't a particularly nice goal, the third one, the backhanded goal from Philip Forsberg.
Yeah, but
he wishes he had it back, but I guess by then the game was already well in hand for Nashville.
Sure, but let's say those three goals don't go in. Do you see Vancouver scoring a goal tied up?
Pessimistically, probably not.
So, regardless of what happened in the third period, it didn't, like, there wasn't a sign to me that Vancouver, you know, as you said, smelled blood in the water and went for it.
Perhaps what's most troubling for me, if you're a Canucks fan, is that this is the first of a 5-game road trip. So typically, the Canucks should have been saying to themselves, let's get this first road win out of the way right now, move on to tomorrow night against Philadelphia, or Carolina, I can't remember who it was, and let's just go from there. Because if they get one win, it takes more pressure off them. But when you lose one game, it puts more pressure on, and then when you lose the next, it puts even more, and so on and so forth. But the fact that they couldn't get this game, again, a game that was pretty there for the taking despite, you know, the sort of falling behind quickly.
Yeah, well, was it really there for the taking?
I think it was. Like, when you're only down one going into the third period, you have to say to yourself, you know, hey, we're still in this game.
Okay, well, I mean, I
don't think they would have came back and won it, but if they had come back and at least salvaged a point out of it, you probably look at that as a win for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, no, if they salvaged a point. Yeah. I'd agree. If they salvage the point, that's a win. Best team in the league. Doesn't lose much at home. If you could take a point away from them, that's good. It's just the way they played. I mean, again, hindsight's 20/20. So, yeah, maybe you're right. It was there for the taking, especially with Hutton coming in cold.
For me, from what I noticed last night, last point I'll make on the game, it seems like a lot of the Canucks shots are coming from the perimeter these days, and I know that doesn't seem like anything new, but they just sort of put pucks on net, hope for rebounds. Clearly, in my mind, this strategy is no longer viable for the Vancouver Canucks, because I think that they're too slow to get to rebounds. How do you change that if you're Willie Desjardins?
Well, you change it to a puck possession team, which, you know, the Canucks have some familiarity with it. The Sedins appreciate having the ability to carry the puck, cycle like there's no tomorrow. But I don't know if the rest of the team is structured to be puck possession. Like, you look at any of the three third lines, and they are a bang and crash setup.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you change into a puck possession team. Unless there's skills that, you know, all these third liners have that we don't necessarily see because of the system.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that Jim Benning is making some phone calls. He's looking at the market, seeing what's available. But right now, Willie Desjardins tasked with a tough challenge, and that's trying to make do with what he has.
In case some of you wonder who the best is.
This guy's an incompetent fool.
The best of the best of the best, sir.
This guy is an absolute media junkie.
The best of the best of the best, sir. Yeah, with honors.
Don't push me here.
But we just sucked.
Oh, no! We suck again!
I rediscovered just how awesomely awesome my life is.
This isn't rock bottom, I don't know what is.
Holy, you said it, Kev.
That was a new drop.
That was a new drop, and in fact, I played it last week. You just didn't notice.
No, I guess I didn't, no.
Thanks for noticing, Chris.
Well, I listen to the content. That's really what I key into.
You like it, though, huh?
It was good, yeah.
Nice and short.
It was.
Much like the Canucks' run of success this season.
Well, it's funny, bring up. I'm trying to find. I mean, we'll get into CHB Haiku later, but there was a haiku after last night's game, as there always seems to be, on the
Twitter machine.
Yeah. Let me just take it. I think it was from.
Hashtag spoiler alert! Just play it in CHB Haiku, regardless.
Well, okay. You want me to save it for them?
Yeah, save it for them.
Okay. Well, I will save it for them.
You pocket that baby.
Saved.
Let's talk about lines. Again, we mentioned before we went into the segment that Willie Desjardins has to manage his team with what he has, and that's fixing the problem within. So first off, do you think it can be done? Is this just a funk? And I think I already know the answer to this.
I have to ask you, Matt. Who looks better on the first line, Burrows or Verbata?
Ugh.
The Burrows experiment seems to be over now.
What?
It was Verbata back up on the first line, was it not?
Yeah, by the end, I think he had put Verbata back on.
Right, so, you know, that change seemed to make sense, but I don't know who play. Like, do you break up the? I talk about three third lines. I was going to say the third line. Which one? You break up the line of Dorsett and Matthias Hansen. No, that line seems to be generating activity. In fact,
you mean Dorsett, Matthias Hansen, or Dorsett, Hansen, Horvat? Typically,
yeah. Well, like essentially, that's that pairing or line. I don't know what the heck it is
of Dorsett and Hansen.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Burrows had some success down there. The so-called second line is dead.
Yep.
There's just nothing.
You mean the second line that usually features at least Bonino, Higgins together?
That's correct. There's like I don't see who you insert there to jumpstart that line, and then sort of whatever you have left. Like there's definitively missing pieces, and I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. But you look at the players we have on the roster, and I can't foresee anyone who jumpstarts anything.
Yeah.
Unless there's someone in Utica that wants to come up and prove themselves.
Nick Jensen won't do it.
Well, no. Every time he seems to come up, he fades to black.
So do you try Hunter Shinkarik at this point? Are you desperate enough to try Hunter Shinkarik?
I don't. See, that's...
In my mind, it's not quite getting to sure, why not kind of mentality, but it's pretty close. It's kind of like I'm close to making that move.
If I'm willing to say I'm panicking, you have to argue that. I'm also probably at the stage of desperation. I would love for something to light a fire under this team.
Like a trade.
Yeah, maybe it is a trade that happens. But as we sort of beat to death last episode, there aren't as many pieces that the Canucks really have that can bring in value. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this, I'm sure, later this episode. But, you know, it's part of me wonders, is there a kid in Utica who would come up and would skate through the boards for this team just because he wants to show that he deserves to be here? Because I think if... you know, this team of really veterans were to rally around someone who was busting their butt to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could restart the mojo that's obviously missing.
You know what? It's funny. When you think of the player that you just described coming up from the minors, I think of the time when Alex Burrows came up, this unsuspecting kid who was a crash and banger playing in Mark Crawford's final year behind the bench for the Vancouver Canucks, and he did offer that little spark. I mean, mind you, it ended just as futile as it did when they missed the playoffs that year, but he did add a spark, and he never went back down to the minors after that.
Well, and I mean, heck, you could go look at Kevin Bieksa when Kevin Bieksa came.
Yeah, same thing.
This, and he played sort of devil may care. I mean, it's been the same Bieksa that we've seen year over year.
But for your money, there's not a guy in that roster of Utica that will offer the same kind of spark.
No, not that I see. Like, not, and that's not a knock. Like, let's say Shinkarik comes up and plays. It doesn't seem to me that's the style of player he and I wouldn't want for him or anyone else
to
do it just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, and it is a lot to ask for a guy who's only 20 years old, so I can't see that move happening either. But again, you're left with Shinkarik, Gaunce. I can't see making that jump. I can't see Cal O'Reilly doing anything. Nick Jensen, I'm looking down the roster here. Do you dare call up Tom Sestito again? That's about it. Darren Archibald's sort of a been there, done that situation. That's about it.
So really, you know, maybe trade is the route, but then I don't know what's available and how you get it.
All right. Well, for my money, by the way, this is the most frequent line combinations of the last three games, just for those people keeping score. Cassian, Matthias, and Richardson is the most commonly used line combination of the last three games. Burrows, Sedin is the next. Then Verbata, Sedin. Dorsett, Hansen, Vey. Bonino, Burrows, Higgins. Dorsett, Hansen, Horvat. Which makes sense.
And that's in the last three games?
Yeah.
Okay.
At even strength.
Yeah.
I mean,
what surprises me is Vey being in the mix. But yeah, last three games, he has been back.
Yeah. I think Vey is one option, like giving him a bigger role if you're Willie Desjardins. I don't think you're happy about it if you're Willie Desjardins. And the other thing that you consider that you're probably not happy about either if you're Willie Desjardins is, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, is giving Zach Cassian a top six role.
Do you actually, well, I...
He doesn't deserve it.
No, but at this point, actually, what does it hurt?
Exactly.
You know, I don't think you put him up with the Sedins. I think you put him on the second line.
So, in my mind, my lines, if I'm Willie Desjardins, and I'm just spitballing here, by the way. I mean, my opinion means absolutely nothing. But Sedin Verbata is who I'd have a top line. I'd put Burrows with Bonino and Cassian on the second line. Dorsett, Vey, and Horvat on the right wing. Give Vey a little more options. And you have Higgins, Mathias, Hanson on your fourth line. Higgins has been terrible, by the way.
But as we've seen and we continue to hear on the radio, Willie Desjardins is showing him complete loyalty.
But is that by sheer necessity, though, don't you think?
Well,
I mean, if you're Desjardins, you're looking down your bench and you're like, oh, there's not much here. I guess I'm going to put the tap Higgins' shoulder every time.
But why not drop him down? Like
I think that's what you have to do if you're Willie Desjardins. And that's why I have him on the fourth line.
Yeah, like Burrows made a trip down there, as I just said. Like it's,
and he worked his way back up, by the way.
Yes. So why is it that Higgins doesn't see that?
Yeah, I think that's what should be done in my mind. Like Higgins has to go to the back of the bus like everybody else now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's just what I think. I'm curious, what do you think of the lines I proposed? What about Vey at third line center?
I'm not sold on him as a center, although.
So would you try Dorsett with Horvat in the middle and Vey on the wing?
Maybe, because the other thing I can consider is like when you look at Horvat, I mean, he's a young player, so he'll do anything that he's asked. Hey, put on the pads, you're in net. He'd probably go do it. But from a developmental perspective, is that really what we're going to start doing now so early in his career?
Like, probably
I look not. Look at Linden, and that shift didn't occur with him until he had, played a few seasons on the wing before he went to the middle.
Yeah. Let's move on a little bit here. We've already talked about how we think that the problem is, it's no secret, by the way, that the Canucks can't score. Chris Higgins, well-documented already. He has 2 points in his last 17 games. And again, you're trotting him out there with that kind of those kind of numbers. There's obviously a depth issue from top to bottom. So you obviously believe that a shakeup is needed here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Friend of the show, Jason Botchford, says that the Canucks have been buyers for a power forward and a scoring winger, not a wiener, although they have a lot of wieners on their team right now. They've been in the market for a power forward / scoring winger, but they'd obviously like to get both in one player.
So who is that?
Lucic, but that's
can
just
the, Yeah, and can the Canucks afford him?
No, probably not. I mean, it's like rock... hard place, and then you have Willie Desjardins and Benning right in the middle.
If I was the Vancouver Canucks, and this is unfortunately part of the problem in how they're structured, they're a playoff bound team, so they are structured to be buyers.
Did you just use the air quotes or something in over there?
Oh, I totally did. It's great for radio.
I just heard. I felt it in like between phone lines.
I would sell, and I wouldn't just sell the farm. I'd simply
scorched earth.
If I'm the Canucks, I'd sell players.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not a fire sell. It's just like, hey, you know what? Make us an offer, because what do we see at every trade deadline?
Sellers and buyers.
Well, okay, we see sellers, buyers, but as the years have gone by, some stupid deals get made.
Teams like Erat for Forsberg.
To name one, wouldn't it be nice to see the Canucks go and
pull off a similar deal,
cleaners and fleece them?
Yeah, I mean, George McPhee's out of a job, so that's out.
Yeah, but there's still desperation. I mean, I don't think we'll necessarily see it from Toronto now. Who's desperate to make the playoffs?
Philadelphia is always desperate to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Minnesota looks pretty desperate at this point. Giving up a third-round pick for Devin Dubnyk, a guy who got waived earlier.
But is that indicative of who's available?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
if Devin Dubnyk got a third, what could Eddie Lack have gotten?
Well, no, but that's we claim to say Eddie Lack's available, but is he?
I hope he's available.
I mean, he's unrestricted next season, so.
Is it next season or the season after next season?
Maybe next. But anyhow, if you're Eddie, do you sign in Vancouver again?
Probably not, because I think he's going to. My guess is Eddie Lack gets moved by the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I agree with most of your sentiments here. I think if you're Jim Benning and you see that the team that's in front of you, you see the trend that they're headed in, you're thinking to yourself, I'm not going to make the fire sale call just yet, but I'm thinking long and hard about it. I think that's what he's thinking right now. And, like, I know that it's January, like mid-January, and there's still literally half the season left to go. But if you're Benning and if you're Desjardins, you're not happy with the kind of output that your team is putting out there.
No, and from a perspective of how the trade deadline tends to make the buyers multiply and the sellers decrease, now's the time you do a deal.
Like now as in January.
That's correct.
Like get ahead of the game and get ahead of the other sellers.
And I think that's why what we're going to start to see sort of in this modern day NHL is teams will start trades, you know, right after the new year. It's still not too late to make a push, make a run. There's maybe less sellers now because there are still teams that are in the mix. Even buyers are willing to make strategic moves in the hope that it makes them that much better. And if you find a willing partner, let's say the Vancouver Canucks find a willing partner in the Eastern Conference, where there's greater likelihood of, you know, that risky trade happening, now's the time to do it. Wait up to the deadline, and either one of two things happens. One, you don't make moves,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Kessler, for instance. Or two, you do make moves, but they suck. Eric Roy.
And then there's the other option. You could be like the San Jose Sharks a couple years ago, and you sell off players like Adam Burrish and those guys, and it's perceived to be a rebuild or a sell, but in fact it actually helps the team and they make the playoffs.
Well, and that's
door number three.
And that's what I'm thinking when I say I think the Canucks should be willing to say, hey, we're willing to sell.
But like, we're also trying to sell for the sake of actually making our team better right now.
Well, and that's where if you look at how bad the Canucks have played to this point, and the fact that they're still in the playoff picture, if this trend continues, what's the sense of going out and buying just so you can move from the 8th spot to the 7th spot?
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. I think they should be selling or at least looking to sell at this point. By the way, in case you're wondering, according to Ian McIntyre, Jim Benning says he will not be trading any picks or prospects the rest of the season.
I'm fine with that.
So leave that up to speculation, but that seems to be between the lines that roster players are instead going to be moved. So that said, first of all, what is Eddie Lack's trade value for you? Seeing that Dubnyk went for a third round pick, what is he worth? A second? More? Second and a prospect?
I feel it's a pick and a prospect.
A third and a prospect or a second and a prospect?
I feel it's second. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't know who else is out there on the market. I was reading Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts, and he was talking about how he can't see how Lack isn't moved.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, you know, who's available, sources were telling him Ward won't be, but he had heard earlier that Ward was. I mean, there's
But so, who's going to take on Cam Ward's contract, too?
Well, I mean, all things considered, you sometimes have to, you know, take that medicine, taste like crap, to make things better.
But why take a guy like Cam Ward, who makes in the neighborhood of $6 million a season, when he can get Eddie Lack, a guy who's making, what was it, two and a half?
Yeah, but what do you have to give up to get him?
I mean, it comes with a little more, obviously, but I think...
If you get Cam Ward cheap and you have the room...
I don't know. I just... I think dollars means more to GMs than it does giving up, you know, a mid-range pick and a mid-range prospect.
Yeah.
It depends on the assets you have, too. That's the biggest thing.
Agreed.
All right, so you think a pick and a prospect.
That's what I feel, yeah. But what do I know?
But you want to believe a second and a prospect.
Second and a prospect, that's correct.
All right, fair enough. I'll agree. So aside from Eddie Lack, I want you to give me who you think could be moved in order. I'm going to name you five players.
Okay.
Sort them from least likely to be moved in your mind to most likely to be moved, again, in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Higgins, Yannick Hansen, Sean Mathias, Alex Burrows, Zach Kassian.
So least likely, I got Hansen, Mathias, Burrows, Kassian, Higgins.
So you're saying Higgins is the most likely to be moved?
Yes.
Followed by Kassian.
That's correct. Even and from a perspective of value, I actually think Hansen brings in better value. But if the Canucks are truly looking to make the playoffs and make a run, can you point out to me a player who's worked harder than Hansen has?
Yeah, I would agree. I would actually put Burrows in that stratosphere as well, though. That's the one part where I would disagree. I would have Hansen as least likely, followed by Burrows as least likely, and then Mathias, then Kassian, then Higgins.
Okay. Well, and that's where the only reason I have Burrows as number three...
Is his contract.
Yes.
Got it. $4 million a year, in case those are wondering at home. Is it four?
I don't know. I think it's four. I go to CapGeek, and that's what's so unfortunate. CapGeek's down.
Yeah, I know. That's for another day, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think any of the five, by the way, are untouchable by any means.
Well, to me, there shouldn't be any untouchables.
I think that if you're Jim Benning and you're strongly considering sending both a message to the team and to improve your roster, you're looking at the possibility of trading Lack and one or two of those players.
Well, I'm going to reference Clay's recent post on CHB there. And he talks about a number of areas. Is one, creativity. The Canucks aren't creative. Two, they're not that young. And three, they're not that deep.
Yep. They're also slow. Throw that in there.
And for me, if you look at those three areas, well, at this point in time, that's a team that should be selling.
Yep.
Because you're not going to buy and be able to go and find depth, because to buy that depth will cost far too much. Are you going to buy the youth? Well, again, costs too much. And if you're going to buy creativity, possible, and I'm not going to say it would cost too much to accomplish that, but how does the creativity fix the age and depth?
Yeah.
So to me, knowing that you can't hit those three, can you hit two out of the three, sell. In fact, you know, if you sell and you get some young players, Colorado last year.
Got some great young players in some trades.
Yeah, and a team who ultimately didn't know how not to win. Like they were too young to lose.
Yeah, I would agree.
You agree with me way too much.
Well, you know what?
We need Clay here to like disrupt,
balance things out. I mean, if Clay were here, by the way, Clay would be like, no, this team's still going to make the playoffs. Yeah, I'm still going to win this bet with you guys. No, I'm not going to have to change my Twitter profile picture to something incredibly embarrassing. I've already got ideas in my head, by the way, for that. I don't know.
He'd also bring up the fact that I go crazy because someone would go and compare the Neely trade again.
Ugh, you got to let that go.
I'm not going to. I lost my mind, in fact.
You did lose your mind. You lost your head is what you did. Of course, at the end of the day, we know it's still January. We're getting ahead of ourselves. It's literally the halfway mark of the season. And again, the Canucks still woke up this morning in a playoff position. We get it. But, Chris, just out of sheer curiosity before we head into the last segments of the show, In your mind, what's the cutoff date for Jim Benning when it comes to throwing the towel on the season and making the playoffs? Keep in mind, by the way, March 2nd is the trade deadline.
Well, throwing it, this is the problem. What's the goal? Goal is to make the playoffs, agreed?
Agreed.
So if the goal is to make the playoffs, I don't think this is, I guess making the playoffs isn't good enough for me. Like, I want a Stanley Cup. And I can accept that the team...
Well, we all want a lot of things, Chris, but I don't want $1 million, but you don't see anybody giving me any of that.
Well, they should, but I'm maybe one of the few people out there that's willing to understand you got to invest some money to make money, and you have to invest, more often or not, at least moderate to long term. So I'd be throwing in the towel after this road trip. If this road
really?
Trip goes south, if it's, as I'm thinking, a road trip of 5 losses.
Yeah, that's the last straw for you?
That's it. Like,
so
you,
if they go 0-5 on this trip, that's when you think this team should throw it in?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, hey, they're going to go and tank for McDavid, but I don't see where there's a positive to continue to do what they did last year. Oh, we're going to make it, and we got every chance, and then they don't, and they're stuck in the middle of mediocrity.
Well, they still got a top 6 pick out of the deal last year, despite all that.
But what ultimately occurred? Did they pass up an opportunity to get better at the trade deadline by holding on the players? Like, we truly don't know what went down and whether or not there was a deal to be made for Ryan Kessler. But if there was...
So hypothetically, had the Canucks moved Ryan Kessler at the trade deadline last year, there's a chance that they would have moved into the top 3 in your mind?
Not from not last year's playoffs, but could they not have gotten more?
Mm.
Like, in my mind, the value of Ryan Kessler was greater at the trade deadline last season than it was when he's narrowed it down to one team.
Yeah, I had read somewhere that the package offered at the trade deadline was better than what was given to them at the draft.
And
so you don't want to have that be repeating itself again, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Albeit on a smaller level.
And to me, that's where you got to make the tough decision. If you're Jim Benning, you know what? It's a bitter pill to swallow, but I think Canucks fans are smart enough to get that if you're going to go and do things and do them right, sometimes you got to take a little short-term pain.
All right, well, I mean, it's a great discussion, really. It has been a great discussion. We want to keep that discussion going. So give us your thoughts on Facebook, by the way. Put it down on the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast Facebook page or on Canucks Hockey Blog's Facebook page. We want to hear your thoughts. Should the Canucks throw in the towel on the season now and get ahead of the game, make some moves, get a high pick, or should they keep going? My money, I'll just put my opinion out there. For me, the cutoff date is at the end of February. We're close to the end of February. They've got one more 5-game road trip after this 5-game road trip. It ends on February 26th. It's a week before the deadline, so after that, I think that's when Benning knows. By then, there's still 21 games left. That's my guess. But I don't think you're wrong by suggesting at the end of this road trip either.
Yeah, and keep in mind, when I say throw in the towel, I'm simply saying accept that you're not a buyer.
Okay, fair enough. So you're not necessarily making trades at the end of this road trip.
No trade for the
But you are sending out to other teams and their GMs that you're available for business.
That's right.
All right, fair enough.
Flipping the open light on.
Let it be known, at Light Force, officially throwing in the towel if the Canucks go 0-5 on this road trip.
It's time for Ask CHB.
All right, Chris, while you're loading up some responses, we'll mention very quickly, the Vancouver Canucks are just bad. They're bad. In March, they have 16 games on the schedule, 10 of which are against teams currently in playoff position. So in my mind, by that trade deadline, Jim Benning will know if he's pushing for this team to make the playoffs or if they're going to be definite sellers. It's not going to be clear-cut, oh, let's just stand pat and see what we have. There will be a direction in my mind that Jim Benning will take with this team by that March 2nd trade deadline. He'll either add some players that he think will help this team push themselves into the playoffs, or he will sell off assets well before that deadline and try and finish as low in the standings as possible. Chris, what do you got?
Well, for SCHB, we essentially did what we've just spoken about, but we did it in such a fashion that we didn't want people to go doom and gloom. We said, you know, give us a grade on how the Canucks' performance has been up to mid-season. And then, as with any report card, and I position it as a report card to Papa Benning, you got to give some comments. You know, if your kid needs improvement, what in? So, Twitter, we got Juice, who Juice was on our last podcast, at JordanCart79. He says it's a C+. Depth player is playing really well. Miller and top guys have been decent as well. Consistency is biggest issue. So I think what he's saying, it's C+, but work habits needs improvement. But passing grade. Roxy, who is at RMystique78, she says, C for crap. Wait, did I just say that? Hashtag Rutrow and hashtag I'm in trouble now. The funny thing is, I don't necessarily disagree.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree on the C+ grading.
Yeah. And C+ seems to be the common theme on Twitter. Rob the Hockey Guy at Rob the Hockey Guy on Twitter, one of our many frenemies in the Smealosphere, says C+, the Canucks are who we thought they were. Well, this would be they are who we thought they are, not they are who we thought they were, but I get that. If we flip it over to Facebook, we got Chris Poulin, who actually throws out a C- at best. The team is old, slow, not fast enough, not big enough, and needs someone who can score and a face-off man. I actually think from a perspective of how Richardson, how Horvat have been doing, and even Henrik, face-offs haven't been a significant problem.
Actually, yeah, I would tend to agree. Bo Horvat has especially helped their cause in the faceoff department. He didn't play last game, and that's why the Canucks went 27-31 in the dot.
Yeah. And then friend of the podcast, Brian Klein, gives a solid C. Forwards, defense, goaltending, special teams are all about where we predicted during the season. Legitimate contending bubble playoff team during a retooling season. You got one top line, three solid third lines, a mediocre but not atrocious defense, and slightly above average goaltending. Think we're one puck-moving defenseman away from clinching the eighth seed. As Dennis Green said, they are who we thought they were. So,
Hey,
Dennis Green seems to be a popular man to quote these days.
Speaking of puck-moving defenseman, I tweeted out last night that Kevin Connaughton, former Canuck Kevin Connaughton, has 7 goals in his first 21 games with the Blue Jackets.
And he picked up on waivers. Did he not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, missed opportunity.
Oops.
But as always with SCHB, we love including your feedback, your thoughts. We love it that you answer our questions. It makes our job easier. So you can always use the hashtag AskCHB. Throw it out to @CanucksHockey or myself @LightForce. Matt, you're @MattLee980. And Clay @CanuckClay.
Garth, that was a haiku.
Oh, yes. It's time for Clay's favorite segment, and that's called the CHB Haiku. Very quickly, before we start off this segment, Chris, when we asked for CHB Haikus earlier, Shoe Thief, @StuckOnTheSofa, friend of the podcast, Shoe Thief, said, "We only respond to Canuck Clay, #loyalty.
You know what? I appreciate that, you know, Shoe Thief has loyalty to Clay.
Who has loyalty to Clay?
Well, Shoe Thief does, but...
And Clay's family.
But to quote John Cena, he's missing the hashtag...
Oh, don't do it.
What, you don't want to hear me say hustle and respect?
Nope. Yeah, whatever. Whatever. Like, that's cool, that's cool. We'll wait for Clay to show up. I mean, this is Clay's favorite thing, but that's cool.
Well... I'm going to go and actually give you a Canucks haiku.
Oh, yeah. Give us the haiku from earlier.
From Stuck on the Sofa, Mr. Shoe Thief. It's about last night's game.
Okay.
It wasn't the coach. Someone else chose the players. Gillis was his name.
Yeah, that's funny. It's true. Like, I think if you're Jim Benning and Desjardins when he took these jobs, you sort of knew that the first year would be tough because it's not quote-unquote your team. It's the team you inherited.
dude, I was just reading. There was actually a haiku conversation. I take that back. That haiku I just gave you was from Jay over at Van City Buzz in response to Shoe Thief.
No.
Because Shoe Thief's haiku, like, this is how crazy
it's taken off.
DHB haiku is. People are talking in haiku on Twitter. So Shoe Thief actually said, maybe last season was not Tortorella's fault. Maybe we just suck. And that, in turn, was responded to by Jay as, it wasn't the coach. Someone else chose the players. Gillis was his name. Crazy, huh?
It's good discussion, man.
Yep. But we did actually get a CHB haiku for this episode from Brent Mack.
Yeah, I got it.
Go ahead.
Brent underscore C Mack says, Canucks spinning wheels, Linden banning Desjardins, last year's team again? ?
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well documented, by the way, that there's been a lot of comparisons drawn to last year's team and this year's team. I think I saw a tweet saying that last year's team had actually scored more goals than this year's team by this point of the season.
That's because the top, well, when there were top two lines, unlike the top just
we're
one
playing
line.
20 minutes a night.
Exactly. You play like, you know, a third to half the game, and you're likely going to put a lot of pucks in that net.
Yeah, fair enough. And again, there's still about a half season left for the Canucks of this year to prove us wrong that this is not last year's team. But if you're Chris and myself, you're not easily impressed. If you're Clay, you're probably doing cartwheels that they're still in the playoff spot.
Yes, he doesn't want us to change nothing on his Twitter.
That is exactly it. Once again, we thank you for your responses. Remember to hashtag your haikus with CHB haiku or send them to Canuck Clay. He favorites them. He retweets them. He loves them. I think he has a wall of them at home somewhere. He just prints them out, puts them on a wall. He likes haikus. So keep sending us your haikus. Keep decorating Clay's walls with haikus.
Channeling the power of the 575.
You're creepy.
I am.
Chris, you want to wrap this puppy up?
Yeah, it's been another one of those full empty episodes. I think that's what's been the trend when it's just you and I on the horn. But I am hoping that the Canucks prove me wrong. I am hoping that they go into Philadelphia and win that game. Actually, the bookies have the Canucks as the favorite.
Yeah, I can see it because Steve Mason won't play in that game, first of all.
Yeah, because right now the Canucks are about a half-goal favorite right now, which I find crazy. Anyhow,
yeah.
I hope they prove me wrong. Like, at the end of the day, I'm a Canucks fan. I want to see them succeed. I want a Stanley Cup. I want it all, and I want it now. I think there's a song on
You are that. Selfish.
Yeah, I am.
You know what? But before we end, we do need something to just lift our spirits up a little bit. Okay. And I thought you were the optimistic one around here.
I'll bring up the optimism for the second half, I promise.
Maybe he'll be bringing it up for the second half of the season.
Yeah, about that. Got to get him on the next episode.
Yeah, well, Clay's a busy guy.
Or we need maybe we can get one of our optimistic listeners on as a guest.
Yeah, you know what? If you're an optimistic listener and you still believe in this team, drop us a line. Prove us wrong. Give us a reason to feel optimistic. That's a great idea.
See, I'm full of great ideas.
You are always full of great ideas.
I'm the guy that makes this podcast go. You're the guy who makes the podcast awesome.
So if you think that the Canucks are still bound for the playoffs, give us a line. We'll try and work some details out and see what we can do to get you on the show.
Yeah, see?
We're full of great ideas today.
Yeah. Clay wouldn't have come up with that one.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for us from the C4 podcast. This is episode 40. I can't believe it. We're already at 40 episodes, by the way. Before you know it, we're going to be at 50. And we got big things in mind, of course. We're going to keep it close to the vest for now. But, again, a lot of good goodies coming up in the next few episodes. So keep it locked on the podcast. Check us out on Facebook at C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. And while you're at it, give Canucks Hockey Blog a like and follow. You can check us out on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, checking us out on iTunes. Check us out on Twitter at MattLee980 and at LightForce and at Canuck Clay. Chris, anything else you want to add?
No, you know what? I, as I said, I hope the Canucks prove me wrong. I hope that I have pressed the panic button too early, and I hope everyone lets me back on the bandwagon.
All right, and with that, we're out.